on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of InvestTalk. It is August 5th, 2015. Appreciate you being with me, especially all the podcast subscribers and everybody listening online, as well as listening to us on this on the radio station in the Bay Area. We appreciate it. We talk to our listeners about stocks and funds and other individual assets and the selection of these themes to get more attention than maybe what they deserve. They are important. Don't get me wrong. The selection of the assets you pick and put in your portfolio. A strong portfolio could be described as one that is well-diversified, and because it is, it's about to stand relatively strong when a certain segment of the market takes some hits. So when the overall market or sectors of the market takes a hit, if you have a good diversified portfolio, it won't take as much as a hit. But keep in mind that what makes up a good stock portfolio for one investor may not be the right one for everybody. There really is no one size fits everybody, all investors. One size does not fit all. At KPP Financial, we have a handful of different programs that try to address the most common life situations and goals that people want. And how a portfolio is constructed is pretty vital to your success. So now we get into the selecting stocks and other vehicles that are most likely to meet your objectives. For example, if you're getting close to retirement, and you're looking for income, then you're naturally going to point to assets that will give you that income. Strong dividend-paying stocks, bonds. Everybody wants to get in the big dividend stocks that pay high dividends. But, you know, there is dangers there. Don't think it's all, oh, I'll just collect the dividend forever. That's not how it works. What if the company's not around forever? What if it's way overpaying dividend, paying more than it makes? That's not uncommon. So you have to understand what you're doing. There are dangers that are hiding inside some of these things. Now, what about a person who's young, who's just starting out? I spoke to one this morning. You know, what do you do? What do they do? Well, I think they should take much more risk. They have plenty of years to make it up when the market does fall, because the market's going to fall. It's going to go up. It's going to fall. It's going to go up. It's going to fall. It's a pattern. Happens all the time. And so far, for the last 100-plus years, it always goes up higher than it goes down. And it all boils down to earnings, sales, economic strength, all those things. And if earnings grow or sales grow, the stock will go up eventually. So if you are trying to figure out your approach, analyze what you need, that's what we're here for. I'm hoping you'll use this as a resource to help you with that. So please think of InvestTalk as a resource. New ideas, answers to your questions, a resource. And okay, enough of that. I'll do my best to answer any questions. Our number is 888-99-CHART. I hope you use it and give me a call. Let's take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, my name is Karen. I love your show. Two questions, if possible. Number one, are your accounts like mutual funds, and then if they go down, other people may sell, and it would affect you? Or is each account made up of individual stocks and bonds, such that, for example, in the bond market, if it were to drop, you could still hold your bonds or ladder of bonds? If I may ask another, I am overweight in things that are down, energy, precious metals, and Latin America, but they're all down. I wondered, is it so important to stay balanced, or is this a good buying time, even though I would be even more overweight in those categories? Thanks so much. Love your show, and feel you all are really trustworthy, engaged advisors. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, thanks for the question. Thank you for the kind words. The accounts that we have for people are their accounts. We buy individual stocks and bonds for them. They hold it in their individual account. Now, what I do is I buy, if I buy a stock, let's say I'm buying Apple, just so we all agree on something. If I buy Apple, I buy it for everybody, but they're all individual accounts. And how I do that is through computer systems. I will go in and say, I want to buy 3% of everybody's portfolio of Apple. And how many shares do I need to buy to give everybody 3%? The computer spits out a list line by line of every account that's in the stock program. It says this, Jane Doe, 200 shares. John Smith, 500 shares. Because it's all 3% of whatever their portfolio is. And at the bottom it says I may have to buy 28,900 shares to give everybody 3%. Then what I would do is I go and buy all those all day long, buy different prices, 1,000 shares here, 2,000 shares there. At the end of the day, we have all the shares we need, 25,900, whatever it was. And we average the price of all the purchases and we allocate it to each individual account. So it's all individual. Even though you will own the same percentage of Apple as I do and everybody else, it's still your individual account. Okay? So there's that question. What was the second question? I got carried away. Let's see. Now I got carried away. I lost track of that second question. And it was fairly easy. Okay, I'll come back to it. There's more to success in portfolio building than just picking good investments. Four steps for creating a portfolio. That's our main talking point today. I also want to discuss the stats, economic stats that came out this week. You know, there's quite a few that came out, and on Friday we're going to have the jobs report. Today we had ADP jobs report, and we'll talk about that. And why are the millennials not taking part in the housing market, or taking part so little in the housing recovery, the housing market? What's going on? What's happening? What's different about the millennials than other generations? And I want to talk about economic growth and do some comparisons over different periods of time in our country and then the current economic recovery coming out of the recession. I think you'll find that pretty instructive. And then we'll talk about, well, why is it different? Okay? So those are things I want to talk about, but of course, whatever you want to talk about is more important. The market was down. Well, no, it was mixed. The Dow was down 10 points. The NASDAQ was up 34, and the S&P up 7. So overall, the market was kind of a little bit on the upside. Remember, the Dow, even though it's down, only represents 30 very large companies. It's interesting, at one point today, all 30 companies were down. But, you know, as I've been saying, and I will continue to say, the market is not well. Hasn't been well all year. And it's until it breaks out or down or up above this range it's in, we're going to stick in it, and it's just not doing very well. Just not. I would really love to see a health restoring correction of about 10%. I think that would be very healthy for the market. I'm worried that it won't happen, that it may just keep running up. If it, you know, break up above, make new highs, and of course you have to stick with it. But without that healthy correction, that may be that may be problematic, having a continue up. So I'm hoping we'll get that normal correction in this point. KPP Financial is a registered investment advisor firm, but we also help our clients with all the important money issues that they have in their lives. If you have questions about insurance, real estate decisions, trusts, wills, any money matter, well, we'll help you. I'll give you help. We're not experts in everything, and if we don't know the answer, we do have access to a lot of experts that can. So check in now at 888-99-CHART. Now, the second part of that question that the young lady asked was about weighting. She has overweight in precious metals and overweight in oils and wanted to know if she should buy more because it's fallen so much, or what she should do, or sell it. And I would say you're already overweight, so I would not overweight more. I probably, at this stage, probably hold on to them. If you're going to buy more, you'd like to see some strength come into it, and buy on strength. Don't buy on weakness. Buy on strength. So hopefully it'll come back. Oil is going to come back, and so will precious metal. It's just the question to on all of our minds is come back from how, from what low point? When? And there is the answer that cannot be answered by anybody. There's a question that no one can answer. When? I don't know. It will come back. If you're patient, it will. But how long will it take and when? Well, it's already been beat up so much. Whenever I see a sector beat up terribly, I tend not to want to get out if I'm still in it. I'm still in it. So, because it just doesn't make sense. You know you'll get out right at the bottom. You know it. So, we don't want to do that. Four steps to creating a portfolio, okay? It's not rocket science. It's pretty simple stuff as far as what you should do. It's implementing what you should do. It gets difficult. First thing you got to do is just come up with a plan, a blueprint, a goal. What kind of portfolio do you want? And then you have to think about, well, am I approaching retirement? Do I want something more conservative? Do I want something to provide dividends and income? Do I do not want to be too risky? Or am I willing to take a lot of risk with this particular group bunch of money here? You have to decide what's your plan, what's your goal, what's the blueprint of your effort here. Okay, so that gives you a place to start. Then decide on asset allocation. How much of what assets do you want where? Do you want a portfolio that reflects the S&P 500 in different tech? Do you want a tech portfolio, big blue chip value portfolio? What kind of portfolio are you interested in? If you're a young person, you want growth. You're not interested in dividends. So decide on the assets that you want in there and what those assets would do over time. Third, discover what you already own. Figure out what you own, part of your overall assets, because some people, you could have a 401k, and then you could have an individual account, you could have an IRA and different assets in each, and you got to figure out, okay, my plan is this. This is what I want to allocate to how much to these different asset classes, and now how much do I already own of these asset classes? Okay, and then finally, make sure you look at the overall picture of your finances and your investments. Not just, well, I'm staring at my 401k and that's it. Well, what if you have other assets? You got to look at it completely, not just one thing at a time. 888-99-CHARTER is our number. We're going to talk to Saeed in Oakland. How you doing, Saeed?
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. I'm calling about Fitbit today.
Yes.
They had a good run recently, close about $50 today.
Yes.
And the early come out, was like street expecting 8 cents, on a $319 million.
Yes.
They beat the estimate, on 21 cents, $400 million, and then was so nice run. I don't understand the market. Why the stock goes down after our, trading? Is something wrong? I don't know. I'm not getting it.
Yes, there's something wrong. If you read it, and this is very, very true often, Saeed, so remember, this is a lesson you can live with forever. They came out, beat their earnings, beat their sales, but remember, it's buying the rumor and selling the news. What they said afterwards is they said that their sales going forward are not going to be quite as strong. That was the announcement they made with the earnings. And now everybody already knows the earnings are already, all this great news is already built into the price. Now you get a little bit of down news, and that's what happens with very high growth stocks. A little bit of bad news, and a little bit, it's just a little bit, was the CEO says the growth is not going to be quite as good for the next quarter. And that's what made the stock go down after hours. People taking profits. So, okay, fine. So it's very common. Very common for high growth stocks. Any little bit of bad news, boom. Even though it's not really bad news. Okay? 888-99-CHART, this is Invest Talk.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. What are stocks and bonds saying about the potential for an increase in recessionary pressures? Should you be making asset allocation changes? That's our talking point for Thursday's podcast. Bring your questions too and join us then.
Let's talk to Art Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Thanks. Let's see. I just wanted to get your opinion on BHP, Billington Limited.
Okay.
I was thinking about picking some up because it's dropped quite a bit, and I think it's like turning around right about now. I was just wondering what your thoughts were.
Okay, this is a company in the mining industry, Australian company engaged in mining and metallurgical energy, coal, iron ore, oil, gas, magnesium, base metals. It's a big company, $104 billion, so it's not a tiny company, it's huge. And it does about $15 billion a quarter, okay? And it's been slowly coming down, the sales, you know, 12% last quarter, 12% the quarter before that, 2%, 2%, then up 6%. So it pays a dividend of 6.4%, which is really nice, and that dividend is not in danger. You know, it's a $38 stock with cash flow of $8.28, so the dividend's not in danger. They're only going to make 95 cents this coming year. This year, today, in 2015, they make $1.74. But when you look at last year, they made $5 a share. That's why the stock has come down so hard. Okay, so now the question is this done? Is it done falling? Because now it looks like the last couple of weeks is coming off. It's coming off. It was up 63 cents today. It's coming off a low. And Art, this is very possible this could be the low, because a high dividend and a big blue chip stock like this, you know, people start looking at the dividend yield and say, you know, do I want a 6.4% dividend yield? And they start to be attractive. I would not be surprised if this was the low that it made. But, you know, I think you still need to give it another week or two, though, to make sure that it's not going to retest the low again. I would be cautious. Cautiously optimistic, Art. How about that? Cautiously optimistic.
Okay. I was actually thinking about getting half position now and then half down the road sometime.
That might be a good idea. And then, you know, whenever you buy half a position, everybody pays more attention. You don't forget about it because you own it. Yeah, so that might be
right.
A good idea. Nothing wrong with that, with getting 6.4% dividend. As long as you're patient, it will recover. It will.
That's just one of the reasons why I was looking at it, for the dividend payout. So
yeah.
I think it might have probably there's some support. What at about 36, isn't there?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So.
And today it's at 38.99, almost 39. So yeah, that's where it bounced from. So that looks like support to me.
Okay.
Thanks, Art. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
We had stats out this week. Personal income came out. It was up 0.4%. It was expected to be up 0.3%. The month before was up 0.4%. Spending was down a little bit. We expected to be up 0.3%, but it was only up 0.2%. But last month, the last report was up 0.7%. So spending was down. Construction spending, building new buildings and so on and so forth. That was a disappointment this week, being up 0.8%. The expectation was to be up 0.8%, and it was up 1.8% the month before. But this report was only up 0.1%. That's going in the wrong direction. The July PMI was 53.8, was 53.8 before. No improvement, but that's still above 50, meaning growth. The ISM, 52.7, expected to be 53.7. And that was a little increase from the month before, but we didn't get it. We got a decrease. It was the month before. It's 53.5. You know, and ADP jobs report came out, 185,000 jobs, and that actually was the market looked at that as good news because it was weaker than everybody expected. They expected to be above 200. And because it wasn't, maybe the Fed won't raise the rates. And I think that's what gave the market in the early morning a little boost. The actual official jobs report for July comes out on Friday. They're expecting 220,000 jobs. For some reason, you know, the ADP was 185. You know, the month before is 223,000. This month is going to be 220. Now, that's the estimate. Excuse me. You notice that the numbers are just not that stellar? They're just okay. You know, not terrible. We're still growing. Not terrible, But this feeds into my next talking point that I want to get to, and that is, you know, where the economy is going to go. Where's the economy going? The Federal Reserve feels pretty confident right now that the economy is, you know, on its feet and will continue to improve. I'm not sure how confident they are about that, but it, you know, they keep telling us that, well, whether they raise the rates in September or beyond that is going to be all depending on the data that keeps coming out. The data that keeps coming out, we had an inflation report this week, no inflation at all. The data that's coming out is saying we have a weak recovery still. It is recovering. We are growing, and it's been growing for a while, but it's not very strong. And there's no inflation. So why would you raise rates in that scenario? Well, again, as I've said before, you only raise them because they're so low. They're zero now. What happens when you want to fight the next recession? You don't have any ammunition, no bullets in your gun to lower the rates to spur the economy. It's already low. But the low rates we have now, not doing much to spur the economy. Coming up on Invest Talk Personal, 10 Insurance Mistakes to Avoid, Part 2. That's in the next half hour right here on Invest Talk, where you can turn to your talk about your money anytime you want. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Andy in San Mateo. How you doing, Andy?
Very good, Steve. Thank you for your program. Really enjoy it.
Good.
Listen on podcasts mostly, but sometimes live.
Thank you for listening. I appreciate it.
I have a question about Teradata, TDC. They are a big data analytics company.
Right.
Pretty good return on equity. They've been falling a bit last few months after last earnings report,
right.
Looking to see if it's a good place to get in. They have positive earnings, all of that stuff, but
okay.
Not sure why it's falling.
Okay, let's talk about it a minute. This is Teradata, everybody. TDC provides enterprise data warehousing, including enterprise and analytical technologies and services. It's a $5 billion company, doesn't pay a dividend. Its earnings are pretty decent, and they're holding up fairly well. They made $2.86 last year, and that was their best year, 2014. 2015, they're going to make $2.44. That's a 15% reduction. And then next year, $2.73 a share, and that's a 12% increase. So it's holding up very well. Sales have flattened, and that's always a disappointing to investors, and that's probably why the stock has fallen off of $46, and today here it is sitting at $36. But I'll tell you this, Andy, it's at in the low range of its five-year PE, which is 13 to 30, and $2.73 next year with a $36 stock. That means, you know, it's right at where it should be historically on the low end of its PE range. Okay? Good return on equity. So what you're doing is you're buying at the lows here. If they can turn around sales, and there's where your attention needs to be, Andy, how are they going to boost sales? How come sales are flat the last, you know, four quarters and down a little bit? What's wrong? Why can't you get those up? What are you doing, Mr. Teradata, to get those sales moving up again? That's where your focus has to be. If you see a story that is going to happen, you definitely want to buy it right where it is. This is where you want to buy. Because this is where it looks like the low to me. About
$35. So from charting perspective, you know, and it's kind of obviously hard to kind of figure out the sales piece, but
from a chart, it's bouncing off 35. You know, it's tested 35 again, and then it went up again, and maybe. So, it's, you know, this is the last 30 days. It's been bouncing off and on up basis of 35 instead of 36, 27. So this looks like a good buy point. Okay, Andy?
Well, they have their earnings report coming out tomorrow. So.
Well, let's see what that says.
Probably should.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see what
that
says.
Just wait for that.
Yeah, well, listen to what the CEO says about the future. That's what's really important. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you, Andy. Appreciate
Thank you
the call.
So much.
It's time for Invest Talk Personal, everybody. 10 insurance mistakes to avoid. This is part 2. Selecting the right kind of insurance. Now, I do have a background in insurance. The selecting the right kind of insurance is very, very important. You know, let's start with long-term care insurance. Personally, I don't like it. You know, I'm not a big and if you want to know why, you can call me up and ask me or send me an email. But I don't want to go into all the details. I just think it's an expensive insurance that very few people use. When they do use it, it's great. But there's lots of limitations. One of the problems you have with long-term care, as you get older, premiums go up. And when you're in retirement, you're no longer making money. Your premium keeps going up. And it gets expensive. And then you cancel it. And a couple years later, you need it. Very common. You have to talk about homeowner insurance. No matter what kind of homeowner insurance, one thing you really want to make sure you have in it is replacement cost. Replacement cost. When your house burns down, if it does, how much does it cost to replace? Now, most homeowners policies are replacement cost. I will say that. But don't overinsure your house. One of the issues I have here is that the land will not disappear. So you're never going to lose the cost of the land. So if your house is worth $1 million, doesn't mean you have to have $1 million insurance. But insurance companies put a little clause in their policies, their homeowner policies, said you have to insure to value. Insure to value. What that means is they will require that you carry enough insurance or close to it to the value of the replacement cost or value of the property. And that means that you got to be real careful. So a good agent will help you with that. But, you know, you don't have to overinsure and make sure you don't underinsure. You got to buy the right size of insurance. Anyways, and picking a health policy based on just the premium alone is not a very good idea. You got to compare apples to apples. What if one policy is much less than the other, but the deductible is much higher and the copay is much higher? And if you don't know what those are, then you need to start educating yourself on those, because it's, you know, all that stuff adds up. What I've seen is insurance costs just continue to rise sharply. Matter of fact, faster than they were before. I don't understand that, but that's what I see. Now, how do I see that? Well, I have a small business. I run it, and I pay the bills. I know what the premiums are, and I know what they went up. Very frustrating. Very frustrating. And those are some of the costly mistakes you need to avoid, you want to avoid when you talk about insurance. Insurance is a complicated issue. Those are contracts. Make sure you try to understand the basics here. Don't just rely on the agent or the person selling it to you either. Be very, very careful. Call me if you have questions. We're right here for any of your questions, 888-99-CHART. Or you can write me a note. Click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com.
There's a link to today's talking point. Just look for Wednesday, August 5th, the heading there on InvestTalk.com. Need help making an important money decision? Why not ask a professional financial advisor? 888-99-CHART is how to reach through to Steve right now.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Henning from Kiev in the Ukraine. Thank you for a great show. Listen to your podcast. I've got a question regarding King Digital Entertainment, ticker symbol KIMG. I'm thinking about taking a speculative position. I was wondering what you thought of the stock entry level and what the future might hold. Thanks again. Have a good day now. Bye-bye.
Okay, King Digital Enterprises. It is a $4.9 billion company doing about $560 million a quarter, so $2 billion a year. So price-to-sales ratio is not too bad. It's an Ireland-based developer of casual mobile games, including Candy Crush, Saga, and Pet Rescue Saga. They're going to make $1.93 this year after making $2.31 last year. And they're going to make $1.81 next year. So earnings are going down. Sales are going down too. So the IPO came out at $21.63 in the middle of 2014. Today it's at $15.86. So the IPO price, you know, selling below the IPO price, sales are falling and earnings are falling. So this would not be a stock I'm interested in. The PE is low. Stock is $15.86. They're going to make $1.81. It's a low PE, but it, you got to be careful when you see a low PE, because if sales and earnings are falling, that's not a good sign. You know, if their sales and earnings were growing, okay, I'd be much more comfortable with the lower PE, but the low PE is justified because those things are falling. So this would not be a stock I'd be interested in. I would not be interested in. It's too speculative. Unless you know something about the games that are coming out that they're developing and it's going to be, you think they're going to be a blockbuster and you want to just take a chance on it, well, that's fine. But fundamentally, this company is weak and I wouldn't buy it. And that's King Digital Enterprises. 888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. Let's talk about why the millennials are having trouble. Why aren't they buying houses? Now, the millennials age group is between 18 and 40. You know, roughly 90% of the people between ages 18 and 40, and most of that group are millennials, just so you know, with student loans. So they did a survey of all these kids in that group, and those people with student loans say that paying those loans has impacted their day-to-day life, including the achievement of some major life milestones. Buying a home is the number one thing millennials say they have put off thanks to their student loan debt. Now, this survey was conducted by Bankrate. So this is different than in previous generations, this high student loan debt. And what's happened is, I think higher education is very, very important. But too many of these millennials and other kids are going into college thinking it's a party time, getting these loans, getting huge loans, and just enjoying college and thinking this is just time, place to have fun. Too many parents are agreeing with them. Too many kids are getting soft degrees. I'm getting a degree in history. Well, history is not going to help you in business. It'll be help you teaching history, but not enough people are getting the hard degrees, engineering degrees, mechanical engineering, technical degrees of some kind, you know, math degrees, things that are much more difficult to achieve, but their jobs are much better and much more plentiful. We have to change this. These kids have huge debt, and now they're focused on paying those debt and I got to pay off my debt. I can't buy a house. So you can see how it affects the economy. It affects it greatly. So that's why the millennials are, why isn't housing doing even better? I mean, it has recovered. It's doing pretty good. Well, one of the reasons is, millennials. Why is it retail sales better? Well, they're busy paying off loans as opposed to busy buying things out there. Just the way it is, and I think we just have a new reality we have to look at. I am all for higher education. Don't get me wrong. I think it's important. But, I have this in my family where a lot of kids, a lot of my nieces and nephews are entering college, and I'm saying, well, what kind of degree are you getting? I don't know. Why are you going out of state? It costs a lot more to go to college out of state. Why don't you go into state? Well, that's a neat school, and, I like it. What? You're paying 25% more than you have to pay. Why don't you? These things don't make sense to me. You're incurring student loans for no reason because it sounds fun. We're here for you, beginning our experienced investor at 888-99-CHART. If you're a podcast listener and you can't reach us during our live program between 4 and 5 Pacific time, you can leave your question like Rod did in Chicago.
Hi, I had a question about placing certain types of orders. There's things like limit orders and stop limit orders. I was wondering, when is it best to use a limit order over a stop limit or vice versa? If you could please answer this question, I'd greatly appreciate it. Thank you very much.
There are many kinds of orders that you put in to buy or sell a stock. And a market order, they say, I want to buy 100 shares of Microsoft. What kind of order is it? I want to buy it at the market. That's the worst kind of order you do. They'll just go and buy it, whatever price it is, and you'll get the worst fill. I like limit orders. You go and I want to buy 100 shares of Microsoft at $32.12. That's a limit order. It's an exact price that you want, whether you're buying or selling. I want this price. And that's what a limit order, stop limit, limit orders, you always, you know, the stop limit is when you want to get out. A limit order is when, you know, when you want to buy something. So you can look for these terms and get exact definitions at a company, at a website called Investopedia.com. I really like Investopedia.com because it's really easy, convenient. You put in stop limit, stop loss, limit order, market order. They'll explain it in much better detail than I can. But if you're going to be trading stocks, you really have to learn what these terms mean. You have to understand and use them. Okay? And again, I like putting an exact price, whether it's to sell or buy. That's a limit. So that they call it a limit order. This is the limit I want right here. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Do you know what the average growth of our economy is, our GDP growth over long periods of time? From 1950 to 1990, 40 years, the average annual economic growth of the United States was 3.74%. From 1950 to 1990. From 90 to 2000, 10 years. It fell. The average was 3.45. Do you know what it has been? And from 2001 to 2007, remember that was the dot-com implosion, and we were in a recession. Then coming out of that recession, do you know what the growth was then? And how about from 2010, because we came out of the recession in 2009, to date, do you know what the GDP growth is then? These are interesting numbers. And we need to talk about why. Because it went from 3.74 for 40 years, now it's 2.2 from 2010 to 2014. Now, this is what the recovery has been. Why? What's wrong? What is wrong? Why aren't we growing like we were? I'm going to have the answer for you when we come back from this break. We still have a few minutes left. There's still time for you to call and ask a question. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and you can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART.
What is investing on margin? Or what's your question? Why not ask it now at 888-99-CHART on InvestTalk? Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. InvestTalk is one of the few podcasts where you can speak with the hosts live. Just call in between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific Time, weekdays. The number, 888-99-CHART.
We're here live 4 to 5 Pacific Time each day, Monday through Friday, but we can take your call anytime you want to make it. 888-99-CHART, you just asked. Call and leave your question, and we call it the 24-hour listen line, and we'll answer the question on the next show.
Oh, hi. My name is Katie, and I'm calling from Tokyo, and I'm wondering about a stock, FNSR, Frank, Nancy, Sam, R, Ringo. Thank you.
Well, thank you for calling, Katie, and don't think I don't know who you are, because I do. I appreciate your calling, really do. This is Finisar Corporation, Finisar, F-I-N-I-S-A-R, manufactures, is out of Sunnyvale, manufactures transmitters, receivers, transceivers, and transponders to connect LAN and WAN, LAN and WAN networks, okay? It is a $1.8 billion company. It's still growing, but growing slowly, 4 or 5% in sales, but earnings are growing faster, 12% this year and 27% next year. It's a $17 stock. It's going to make $1.49 next year. The stock itself has fallen sharply from $23 down to $17 in the last couple of months. Have you noticed a pattern here, everybody? Stocks fallen sharply in the last couple of months. Many stocks have fallen sharply in the last couple of months. It's kind of interesting. But the index are holding up. It's not, they're not falling. But there's just, it looks like sector rotation out of certain things and into others. Anyways, earnings are falling on a quarterly basis and increasing on an annual basis. I'm not sure why that's the case. They must have a really good quarter coming up, or have had quarters coming up. It's not cheap and it's not expensive. And it, I do like the fact that it's still growing its sales. And the reason why it's fallen off is that sales have used to be in the 20, growth used to be in the 20% quarter after quarter after quarter until 3 quarters ago. And then it's fell to single digits growth. And that's what's causing this problem for the company. It's a $1.8 billion company, so it's a small cap company. And it looks fine, but you need a catalyst for it to grow. Something has to break. So the sales will increase. So you're going to find out why the sales are have weakened and what are they doing about it. And if there is a good story about future growth, because the company is solid. I mean, there's nothing, there's hardly any debt. It's a solid company. But you, the return on equity is a little weak at 10%. So you want to look for some kind of catalyst. And is there a catalyst in their story going forward? What are the CEO and COO saying about that? And that's FNSR, everybody, FNSR. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what is the problem with GDP growth that we were averaging much higher, 3.5%, now we're at 2.5%? You know, we're talking over, you know, since 1950. And we're talking from 2001 on, it's been below 2.5%. Right now, the last, from this recent recession, 2.2. Well, the problem is twofold, population and productivity. And I, you can argue all you want about, well, no, it's overspending by the government, high debt by our government, tax burdens, all that stuff is all true. I'm not even saying that's true. But the basic problem is that our population growth has shrunk over that period of time. In 2014, it was 0.75% according to the U.S. Census Bureau. And that's about half as it was in the 1990s. Productivity. And productivity, think of productivity as like the secret sauce of the economy. Workers making more and more things, becoming more efficient, and increasing our standard of living, and on and on and on. And that has fallen as well. We're not as productive. We still are the most productive people in the world. But, for instance, the amount of goods and services produced by American workers increased by a healthy 2.7% a year since 1948, and it even grew by a whopping 3.3% annually from 1998 to 2005. But now it's 0.6%. 0.6. That's why. How to fix it? Well, that's more complex. Some of the economists are saying to fix it, you need to simplify our tax code, do certain things. And I don't know if that's that. We're out of time for today. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP Financial, thank you for listening today. I hope you have a good evening. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.